and welcome to Marooned at MacBytes Headquarters, day 376. I was going to stop at 370 and see if he knew.
I was going to stop at 370.
But I could tell you were going to stop.
And see if you knew.
How do I know precisely what day it is?
I don't know.
Oh, put the buntings up. She is up to date. All I've got to finish, to be totally and completely up to date, is a few blog posts. The last, probably about 30, about 30, are already there. There's a little gap in the middle that I'm dealing with. But how are we all doing? Oh, let me know. Who was first in? I've got to go and check.
Johnny's fetching his dinner.
Oh, let me check. Oh, Simon! Congratulations! Not 15th today, eh? Ooh! Hello, Renee. Hello, Simon, as well. Hello, Jonathan. That's not bad at all, Jonathan. Fourth. That's a grand improvement. But we know it's Pesach week, so we're cutting you some slack.
Yeah.
Not at all sure that that counts tonight, mind you. We'll see how it goes.
What's for dinner, Johnny?
It'll involve gherkin, just to play with Simon's mind.
Or fried matzah.
Hello, Alex.
I used to have fried matzah.
Oh, Mike.
What? No.
No.
It's a delicacy. Johnny will tell you.
But matzah's just like flour and water.
What you do is you get a couple of sort of squares. They're squares, aren't they?
Yes, yeah. They are, Mike.
A couple of squares. You break it up. You soak it in water. Throw the water away once it's all soft. Throw some egg over it. So it's like an omelette. It's matzah. So it's a bit like...
Do you think it'd work with oatcakes?
Probably.
Oh, there you go, and a rare delicacy.
What else? Eggy bread. Eggy bread.
So it's, oh, no, eggy bread's nice. Eggy bread is indeed
it's
nice.
It's the Pesach equivalent of eggy bread.
I do wonder, see, though...
Kim eats matzah.
Hmm.
And Grandpa Isaacs gave him fried matzah.
Oh, there you go, then.
There we go.
Jonathan is indeed quite right, though.
That's a bri, yeah.
He said he can't get over how amazing Anthony was yesterday. He was indeed. That was so fascinating. I actually found an article today that was related as well, so I'll have to dig that out.
No, I don't want to save it to OneNote. That looks rather nice. That's strawberry jam.
Ooh, let me have a look. Oh, now you see you've got him craving.
Yeah.
Mind you, that doesn't take much, does it, Mike?
I did have an omelette this morning.
I know, see, that does look nice. That definitely looks like a breakfast thing that I could get on with. Only obviously I can't eat the matzah. If you take the gluten out of the matzah, it's a glass of water. So that's not going to work.
No, you can get gluten-free matzah.
I dread to think. Mind you, it couldn't taste any more cardboardy, could
gluten-free
it?
Gluten-free
matzah, if you think about
there
it.
We go. £10 from Amazon, because that's because the Beth Dean want a cut.
Oh, indeed. Right. Oh, Kim says, who knows how that ship got stuck in the canal? I've no idea, but there's a picture on one of the front covers of one of our papers here, and it's so comical. They're trying to dig it out, and you should see the size of the digger. Let me, where am I going to find that? BBC News, probably. Let's have a look, see if I can find it. It's an alarming picture when you think, like, how did it get stuck in the first place? But then, do you really think you're getting it out like that? Oh, there's no newspaper front covers, for crying out loud. Let's have a look. Because she doesn't want to. She wants to sit there to stop you getting outside. There we go. Is she actually here yet? No, because I'm looking at this. Right, yeah, I've got it. In fact, I think I can send you straight to it, but I will put it up in the cloud toy. I don't think this is a mock-up, but it does look like a little dinky toy by comparison. Why aren't you uploading? Are you just going to be in one of those moods today? Whee, I think it's done. Right, there we go. That's the front of one of our papers, and it reminds me of Brexit and what it took to shift that. There you go, have a look at it. Matzah is like a flat Jewish bread, yes, it's like a cracker. If you have, what were those crackers called? The orange ones? Jacob's. Jacob's crackers, it's like that. Hello, Alex. I can't remember if I said hello to Alex. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Anthony.
Is it raining?
It was raining.
Simon's understanding how it used to work 20 years ago when Simon's dad was on the ship, but was a ship captain. Ships assigned a pilot, Suez Canal navigation expert, one on each ship. Maybe they didn't do that these days.
Good girl.
Maybe they're relying on sat navs and stuff, but it didn't end well, did it? It's not the first time it's happened. I doubt it'll be the last. But this has kind of impacted world trade. The last time I remember that happening was this captain. He was very, very cocky with it. He wasn't a captain of a ship like that, which is goods. This was a cruise ship, and he wanted to be renowned for the one who took people closest to the shore so they could see things. It didn't end well. No, it ended up stuck on the shoreline. Went a little bit too close. Right, why hang on a minute, I've missed something here. Kim's saying she hopes Renee is better soon. Oh, somewhat ill under the weather, in bed with a warm comforter. Oh, Renee, hugs. Hope you're feeling much better very soon. Right, carrying on. Kim thinks they should bring that back if they don't still do it. You'd imagine in this day and age, but it's probably way more complex than you would imagine. I watched this documentary about the docks in, I think it was Amsterdam, and it was amazing. They had all these underground magnets, which is how the things are unloaded. And they also had, like, they explained about the channels in and out and how they had to constantly dredge them to get the silt off the bottom, or it just wouldn't be deep enough. And you think, I did not know that stuff like that had to happen. Put it like that. It was an amazing documentary. I love stuff like that. Let me catch up. May not be needed with high-spec GPS these days. Well, you think that, Simon, but that's only giving you positioning. I don't think you can beat the first-hand knowledge of somebody who can just look at the colour of the water and tell you to go a different way. And, you know, we're not there with GPS yet. That reminds me of a story I may have mentioned before. But when I was in my second year at university, we went into the equity and trust lecture. Yeah, it's as boring as it sounds, trust me. It was my least favourite subject. Oh, apart from family law, which was dire, which I dropped. It was that bad. But equity and trust, tricky. Tricky little blighter that. So we're scribbling down everything we can scribble down, and the lecturer's going at 90 miles an hour, and he wafts these books past us, and I thought I'd got the author's name, but I'd missed one. So I'd got like the name of one book, and I knew what the book looked like because it went past my head, but I could not remember who it was. So I goes to the bookshop. Now, there were two bookshops literally within 100 yards of each other. In fact, there were three. Two of them were like all shiny chrome and glass. And the third one looked like it was out of date when Dickens was around. And Dickens actually did work in very close to this shop and probably went in it. It really was that old. Now, they were the ones who had secondhand books. So you got them like at least 40% off, which was great. So I toddled in there and I'm ticking off books as I'm picking them up. And then I saw this one and it said, you know, E&T, Equity and Trusts. And then I put next to it blue cover. I thought, that's not going to be much help, is it? So he said, you've got everything. So I said, well, there's one that he mentioned, but I don't think you're going to be able to find it. So he said, go on. You know, and this was not a bloke with a computer. There was a computer somewhere in the shop, but no, this was just one bloke sat there. I said, well, it was mentioned in Equity and Trusts, but I didn't catch the name. I said, but the cover was blue. And he went, that's Pettit on Trust 1986, second edition. Went to the shelf and picked it up. And I thought, wow, you know, that guy was better than a computer. There's no way, unless there was a picture of the cover or somebody had actually made a field and put in cover colour. There's no way a computer would have found that. It could have limited it down to maybe where Equity or Trusts or Equity and Trust was in the title, but it couldn't have just, boom, given you that information. So sometimes a real person is much, much better. Must have been a tornado to move that ship. Well, I don't know how they're going to move it now. I mean, it actually looks from that picture on the front of the Star, and I wouldn't take any notice of that. It was literally just the picture. It actually looks, how it's still vertical, I don't know. And I wouldn't fancy being that truck driver underneath. I mean, what exactly is he trying to do? If he gets all the stuff out from next to it, it might keel over. I wouldn't fancy that job. There's a job I would not fancy. Yay, Anthony's in. Hello. Yes, it was fascinating, wasn't it? I did not know there were different Braille dialects. Yeah, we had so many questions and it was fantastic. No, I do not read the Star, Jonathan. What I do is, on the BBC at midnight, they put the covers up for the following day's papers, and that one was at the bottom. But trust me, no, I mean, nobody reads the Star, Jonathan. There's no words. You just look at the pictures. I mean, I'm sure Simon appreciates the one of Bozo. They constantly refer to Boris as Bozo. That hair that they've got on him is a wig, obviously. But you know what? It's slightly better than his own at the moment. Mm. But no, I don't read any newspapers. Particular. In fact, I thought you couldn't get worse than the Star and the Sun and the Mirror. And then I started looking at the column of shame in the Mail and the Express. And they are all as bad as one another. They're not even fit to be toilet paper. They're not. CQ, Deb, CQ. He's like digging with a spoon. Yeah, I can't understand what he's doing. I mean, he looks, at first, I thought, is he kind of trying to move it? Is the arm of it pushing the boat? And then I realised, no, it's not. If you look at it, he seems to be trying to move some kind of soil, silt, sand. Like it says, you're going to need a bigger digger. Yeah, that is not going to get him anywhere. I have no idea how they're going to do that. I mean, you'd imagine, can't they just put a tug in? Or several tugs and tug the thing? Or will that not work? Could be there for quite some time. Might need a new canal at this rate. Oh, Mrs. Simon was listening yesterday. Hello, Mrs. Simon. Good to see you. We have missed you. We have.
Mrs. Simon listens quite a lot, she says.
Good, good. Talking of missing folk, I've mailed Tony and sent your regards. Our regards, your regards, the dog's regards, the lot. Haven't heard back, but fingers crossed he's okay. So I have mailed and let him know that we're thinking of him. What else have we got in here? Equity and Trust Awful. It was diabolical, wasn't it, Jonathan? It was so theoretical and archaic. All right, your delivery's here.
Oh.
Lola, you're staying here with me.
Lola,
come on. On your bed. Good girl. Oh, is it Wendy? Not sure. It's dark. Jim, we were doing quite nicely, but it's gone into night mode. It's quite dark. I don't think that's Wendy, but it could be. You know, it's a wonder they ever catch anybody, isn't it? With that. Oh, that looks like it's got long hair-ish. Let's zoom in. That could be a lady. Well, I'm thinking he's got long hair. Could be. we'll have to zoom in and then wait till she turns around. If it's Wendy, you're going to be peeved, aren't you? Oh, I think Lola thinks it's Wendy. She's looking rather giddy. Shall I have to let you downstairs so you can see Wendy? Her head's on a ratchet now, going from side to side. Oh, good. Mrs. Simon is here in spirit, if not in text. That's just as good, Mrs. Simon. Elaine would be well capable to turn that ship. Oh, let me have a look at this one. We should set Lola on it, then it'd be fine. Let's have a look. So simple. Oh yeah, it's easy like that. I don't know how he got that in there. Was he trying to do a U-turn? I mean, that is literally blocked from side to side. I do believe Wendy's here. Lola's off to investigate. Oh. Is that... Hello, Paul. Is that like reading Playboy for the articles? No, honestly. I never see the inside of the Star. In fact, I never see the inside of any of the papers. Sometimes it's quite funny. You see something on the front cover that's like a series or an interview with somebody. Like, that looks interesting. Then you're like, yeah, but you've not got the paper, remember? You're just looking at the front cover. You're looking at the front cover and that's it. So I miss it all. You'll get something like... there was something about Strictly the other day. And I do actually like Strictly. guilty pleasure. And I thought, oh, I'll read. Oh, no, I won't, because that's only on the front and I haven't got the rest of the paper. Oh, never mind. Never mind. Oh, Deb was looking up ships that my great-great-grandfather came over in 1904. The RMS Arabic. Nice size ocean liner sunk by a U-24 in 1915 off the coast of England. Typical. Typical. And when my gran died, there was a stick. Not like a walking stick, like a military stick that the officers would walk around with under their arm. And we found a number on it. And I think we had a surname on it. And we looked it up at the, I think it was the military registry. And it was one of her brothers, because she lost all of her brothers in the war. So she started off with about five brothers and ended up with none. And he'd got a commendation for something or other, which was fascinating. And we had no idea until we found this little stick. It was like, what's this? And it had like a gold knob on the top of it, but it wasn't that long, maybe like 18 inches, 2 foot, something like that. And Mum said, it looks like the kind of thing that an officer would put under their arm. And it was. But luckily this number was on it, like a military service number. So we did find some information out. We also, I can't remember why I was looking that up. It'd be something Mum wanted, no doubt. And I found the records of a church from about 1908. And it was like the local parish records. And somebody had the foresight to put them on the actual church website. So it wasn't locked away somewhere. It was actually on the church website. Very much 1992 called and wanted their website back. But as I'm looking at the information, the reason it had returned this, despite how plain it was, you know, it had text-based information, so it was very SEO'd. It was coming up high in the search engine for my granddad's name. So I'm looking down the list, and his birthday was August. So I keep going down. And I get to the right month, and then I'm focusing in, and I'm focusing on the surname, and I find the birth record that we were looking for. So found that, and then fascinating, right underneath was another birth record. My granddad was called George, and this one was Francis, and Francis was one of the family names because I've got an uncle Frank, and it seems the birth date was identical, so it seems he was a twin, but his twin died. And we had no idea. He never mentioned it. We don't even know if he knew. But that's fascinating. Because we didn't have kids, isn't it? Might have been twins. Couldn't cope with one, much less two. Not at the same time. Right. Simon says, he remembers when Boris Johnson was editor of The Spectator and they had a real go at the people of Liverpool, calling them a city of well-paid defendants. Just one more reason you loathe him. Liverpool are in a bit of trouble at the moment, aren't they? Don't the government want to kind of centralise them? Something to do with fraud and stuff. And yet 5 minutes ago, they were saying how marvellous Liverpool were in terms of, didn't they do that early COVID thing, mass testing? Oh, and they were amazing. They were absolutely amazing. And now it's like, yeah, that guy that was amazing, yeah, we've sacked him. I can't keep up with it. I can't. Boris Johnson says whatever he thinks you want to hear in a bumbling tone and expects you to accept every single word. I mean, for him to be saying right now, yeah, I've booked my place at the pub on the 12th of April. People are obsessed with going to the pub as though it's like, oh, freedom, I can go to the pub. Unbelievable. Elaine would use a dirty hack and get it on his way. There's got to be a way, hasn't there? There has got to be a way. But I would love to know the history of how it got stuck. Really would. But to think they've got one guy trying to fix it, that's typical. A Briton in charge at all? Asking for a friend. It's the kind of trick where you get up to. But luckily at the moment, everything's going tickety-boo here. The EU are tearing themselves apart. They want the AstraZeneca vaccines. AstraZeneca have never said they're not sending the vaccines. What they're saying is, you've got 26 million sat there already. Why don't you think of giving some out? And then you could take the other 29 million. There's a plan. But they're just intent on tearing themselves apart. Macron particularly, apparently. I just leave them to it. I can't understand why things are so different in the UK to Europe. And I thought Germany would have been way ahead of the curve, but apparently not. Who knows? Other ship that came up, 1888, the RMS Adriatic, tended to be prone to accidents. It was a lot smaller than the Arabic. Only 850 passengers. That doesn't seem a lot, actually, does it? What I'm surprised about is when a ship or an aircraft has had a serious accident, they kind of patch it up and send it on its way. I was watching an aircraft investigation, and this was like the fifth time that this aeroplane had had a crash. And I thought, do you know what? Just scrap it. Be done. But they just kind of put some paint on it and sell it on. It sounds like selling a ringer on. Right. Hang on. Oh, all the charts moving. All right. Paul heard it was blown sideways by a sandstorm. It'd have to be a heck of a storm, wouldn't it? For the size and weight that is. I was actually thinking it might be an idea to take some of the weight off it and then it might float easier. But there's no way to get anything off it, is there? So they're going to have to move it as it is. Or build another canal, which might be faster. Simon says if the front of the ship touched the side, it's possible the momentum pushed the back towards the other side and all that momentum must go somewhere. True, it is actually, like, it looks like they've tried to do a U-turn, doesn't it? So it's a heck of a thing. And it must never have happened before. So I don't know how bad the weather usually is there. But, so she saw Wendy.
It was Wendy.
Good grief, first time in weeks.
Yeah, she asked after you.
Oh.
She said, how sweet pea.
Who's a lucky girl? Oh, she's not saying anything now. She wanted more time with Wendy.
You're coming downstairs with me?
I haven't decided.
Whilst I put it all away.
All I can smell at the moment is hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
I'm presuming copious amounts of that were used.
Yeah.
We're discussing this ship and how it ended up the way it is.
Oh.
Which is stuck, basically. But stuck at like 90 degrees to where it should be, which is not good. Auntie says, there's a good article on the BBC. They're using tugs and things to try and shift it. That was what I would have suggested, but it's going to take a lot of tugs, isn't it? Really. And how long's it been there now? I mean, people seem to have been talking about it for at least 2 or 3 days. Can't they just put it in reverse? No, Jonathan, it's stuck sideways. It is literally sideways. Have we got a picture of it sideways? Let's see what we can find. Oh, the interesting things you end up putting in. You need to see it like in the context, as it were. It is literally stuck sideways. Is that one? No, not really. They're very poor in terms of being context. I guess if you look at that picky there, let me get that picky. That's taken from the bow of one of the other ships. And you can see from that. Why aren't you uploading it? Don't be silly. You can see from that, if that's straight on, then the Evergreen ship in front of it is sideways. I guess you could get tugs on one side of it, tugging the bow one way, and then tugs the other side, pulling the stern. And if you did it at the same time, technically speaking, it would turn. But I guess they've got to be incredibly careful. I mean, if it starts to tip, there's going to be no stopping it. But to think it's actually, you can't even get past it, can you? It's actually the full width of it. Not good. It's going to take weeks to unload it. Well, that's what I saw in this documentary about unloading and how I think I had like a vision of like the 1950s on the docks on the east coast of America. But these things are all automated. There is occasionally a driver for, you know, like a crane operator. But in essence, the thing does it itself. Once the crane operator has the thing off, it does it itself. And that's what I'm thinking looking at that. There's no way to unload it actually where it is or get anything off. Could these things be better designed, do we think? Oh, you know what'll happen next, don't you? Apple will design one. It'll be amazing, but, you know, you're going to need 17 kidneys to buy one. Oh, the Adriatic, using the best technology at the time, are fitted with gas lights, considered a modern ship and was the flagship of the White Star Line. Ah, the White Star Line. The Titanic. Not got the best history, have it? Oh, I've got another link there to look at, so I'll grab that and put that in. Let's have a look at
And I'll go and put the shopping away.
Oh, I'm loving that. I'm loving that.
You like your water, don't you?
Oh, do people have to judge? I can't be doing with it.
Yeah, it would have been better if you'd sent what I ordered.
What have they missed?
Well, the bottles of water, I ordered the cheap own brand
Yeah,
Tesco water,
basics.
and they've sent Buxton Spring, Bruxton.
That we're not paying for Buxton whatever
No, we're
though.
not.
No, because that's good. Well, I don't mind as long as it's edible.
Yeah, but there's only 1.5 litres in it, not two.
Give them feedback. Tell them you're annoyed. I don't know how, you know, they make a profit because they're sending you something. They're charging you less for it, but they're paying more for it. Doesn't make
Oh, they make
sense.
plenty of
Oh,
profit.
I know they make plenty of profit,
Yeah,
but honestly,
they're the Apple of the grocery
they
world.
are actually. Hello, Tracy. AliExpress deliveries will be late now. I think everybody's deliveries could be late. I ordered something, and this was a good few weeks back. And I thought, when I looked at the delivery date, you know, that's nearly 2 weeks. I thought, good grief, it's coming. You know, it's from this country, so it doesn't have to pass through customs or whatever. And I thought that's a long time. But it was only an estimate, so I thought, well, the odds are it'll arrive sooner. Needless to say, odds are it didn't. Nor did it arrive by the delivery date. So I'm thinking, well, you know, COVID, Royal Mail, and all of that.
Come down with Daddy.
So I'll have to have a look at it and see. Give them a bit of leeway. And I'm thinking, well, how much leeway do you give them? So I thought, well, 2 or 3 days, I think, is enough. Anyway, in the end, gave them a week. And then I thought, I'll give them a couple more days. Still no sign of it. So it was all automated in terms of, you know, my item didn't arrive. So I clicked that and put that I'd left it an extra 10 days and it's still not here. Anyway, guy got back to me really quick and said, I'll pop another one in the post. Royal Mail have been useless lately. And I thought it must be costing people a fortune because, you know, for a small value item, are you really going to pay the track delivery on it with insurance? Because it's probably like 80% of the price of the item. But if you don't, and it goes missing, then you know, you're forking out twice, but only getting one stream of income for it. Royal Mail really do want taking out and flogging. Right, let's catch up. Such a mess all the way around. You feel bad for the captain and anyone carrying fresh food on their ship. Well, that's the point, isn't it? What's on the other ships that are now stuck? And we have a thing here in the UK. I don't know if you've got anything equivalent, but obviously we're an island and we have to transport goods to and from the EU, which obviously Brexit, that's proving interesting. But Brexit is really paperwork. But in terms of, you know, somebody goes on strike or something happens, and before you know it, we've got massive HGV1 trucks queued up for miles. There is actually, I think originally it was called Operation Stack. And what happens is there is a motorway in Kent that goes from London to the south coast. And it will go, there'll be the ships that take some of the stuff and the Channel Tunnel, which takes the rest. But they're all heading in the same direction. And it only takes one blip, and before you know it, the motorway is jammed solid. So Operation Stack is where the police down there are experts at, within sort of 30 minutes, going out onto the motorway and putting down the cones, and they know exactly what they're doing. And these massive trucks end up on the hard shoulder, which is like the recovery lane of a motorway. And the tailback can be 40 or 50 miles full of trucks. They've got a new one at the moment, so it's not Operation Stack anymore. This was in preparation for Brexit. And they now have lorry car parks that they can commandeer. So they get some of this stuff off the motorway. completely, and it goes into light fields. The last time it was used was just before Christmas, when France wouldn't take anybody from the UK without COVID tests, if you remember, and then it started to back up. So there is that in place, and I'm wondering with this, if this has never happened before, what's the protocol? Do they have a kind of place that they can put people, or, you know, stop them going any further? If it's never been needed, maybe not. Plus the fact, who's in charge of this? You know, obviously in Kent, it's the Kent Police, so that's easy. With this, I honestly don't know. And these ships are coming from all over the world. Amazon just became a pharmacy. That would be cool here, because at least you'd be able to get hold of stuff. Nearest we've got to an online pharmacy is Boots. Boots the chemist, who started life, I think it was the early 20th century in Nottingham. They kind of branched out into stationery and makeup and all kinds of stuff, but they've kind of reined that back in a bit now. Used to be able to go there and get your music in the 80s and 90s, but not so much now. Now it's more, there's still makeup. There's a pharmacy counter. What else do they sell? Kind of toothpaste and hair dye, stuff like that. But Amazon, yeah, that'd be kind of cool. At least they bring them to the door. They used to move cattle around on ships. Maybe some horrifying welfare issues after 3 weeks. Oh, I sincerely hope not. Looking at the one that's stuck, it looks like containers, doesn't it? And I don't think they put animals in those kind of containers. They look like shipping containers. But the ones that are backed up, who knows? That's what I'm saying. I wonder if there is a plan. At least with the UK, where, I mean, it happens quite frequently. It must happen 6-7 times a year. And you see these pictures, you know, like drone footage of the queue for 50 or 60 miles. So, I mean, sometimes they won't let the trucks out of London because they know if they get them on the M20, where are they putting them? The entire country could tip. There's that many of them down there. But I just wondered if they've got some kind of emergency plan, because if not, they're going to need one. Oh, there's a photo that shows the complete calamity for young Jonathan. I'm assuming this is the same one. You can't really tell because it's from the top. Let's have a look where that came from. There's an ad thing on it, but I've got a bloody ad blocker, haven't I? Right, I'll get the link and I'll put the link in. Jonathan, have a look at that. That'll show you what the problem is. Why you can't just get the ones behind to go past. Oh, dear, dear me. Could the world get any stranger? I shouldn't tempt fate, should I? I should not tempt fate like that. Oh, Renee has Boots over there as well. Boots number 7. Yeah, that was their makeup range. I did not know that. I thought that was a UK brand. And Tracy has bought so much kitchen stuff from Boots. Brilliant prices and good quality. They do have a lot of own brand stuff that's very, very good. I have had makeup in the day. But I prefer Bourjois. So I have had theirs, but basically it was the colour. I remember when I had my teeth done, and I'd never in my entire life wanted to draw attention to my teeth. So my lipstick was kind of very pale, and like, you hardly notice it's there. Once I got my teeth done, it was like, right, I'm not putting the fake tan thing on, not doing the fake tan so the teeth look whiter, but what's the darkest lipstick you've got? And I look like Abby off NCIS. It was like maroon and then some. So I put this lipstick on and Mike went, whoa, that's different. I said, no, I know, but look at the teeth. The darker the lipstick, the better the teeth looked. So I went to one of the ladies' night's do's. And I remember this lady coming over and talking to me. And she said, oh, you're amazing. She said, I wouldn't dare wear lipstick that colour. She said, and it stays on all night. How do you do it? And I thought, well, I've already done the kind of patting down with a tissue thing, then the setting it with powder thing, and then the putting a second thing on top and then repeat, rinse and repeat 3 times. It's not going anywhere. You're going to need bleach to get this off. But it did. It lasted all night. So they do some very, very good stuff. But Boots only does pharmacy and prescriptions. No, ours doesn't do as much as it used to, which is quite sad. Because I got my first computer from Boots. They actually used to sell computers when it was like a Sinclair Spectrum or a Commodore 64. They had a whole computing department and it did really well because they had a high street presence. And this was like 1984, 85 time when these things were big, as mainly gaming consoles, I'll grant you. Not many people were like buying them and programming them like I did. But it was good that they were there in the high street because it made it easier to buy. And then they stopped doing that, and I found that quite sad. I love boots. I do. Kim read one article that said the winds were only 31 miles an hour. That's not very high winds. Noah, we had wind, really bad wind, about 10 days ago, and it was rattling around outside. And I glanced at the weather, and it said it was like 80 mile an hour gales. So I don't suppose they get that kind of weather there, which is just as well. I can't believe they haven't got like... When we went on holiday to Devon, freaked my aunt out. We all went together. Lovely holiday. Notice the sarcasm. And it's very hilly in Devon. And these hills are so steep that you really need to take a run at them if you're going uphill. And if you're going downhill, if your brakes fail, you've had it. You really have. They are that steep and that narrow. So every sort of half mile or so, there is a sand pit at the side of the road. And if your brakes go, you just drive into this sand pit and it will stop you. And these things are all down the hills. So it's like a little, if you think of it as a river, like a tributary that you can just dive off into. My aunt was freaked out about these things. And I just thought, don't be ridiculous. I think I was about 8. And I thought, don't be ridiculous. It's good they're there. You know, you just pray to God you never need to use one. If you do, aren't you going to be happy that it's there rather than end up in somebody's front garden? But no, she couldn't see the positive of it. About 5 days into the holiday, she completely lost it in our car. And it was because we were going past one of these things and she'd been staring at them every time we went past. But this particular one, this particular day, somebody had had to use it and it had tire tracks in it. She totally lost it. My dad was like, can you just tie that woman up? He's trying to drive while she's like, oh, somebody's had to use it. He's like, well, at least it's there. That looks very straight and doesn't look like there's any kind of wear that they could, well, one, take out of the main bit, all the ones that are now queued, or two, take that out of there. You know, just, well, let's just tilt it slightly, drive it on and park it somewhere. Doesn't look like they've got that kind of thing going. I don't think we've got anywhere in the UK that would be big enough to cause that kind of crisis. We've got lots of waterways in Manchester. There's a huge canal system, as we know from the Manchester pusher, the maybe, maybe not serial murderer who pushes people into the canal. But not like that. I mean, the worst we've seen is when the tide gets really high and it's coming over the banks and it's taking some of the barges with it. But apart from that, I don't think we'd end up with something that looked like that. There you go. And London, which obviously has the Thames running clean through it, they have the Thames Barrier, which is a fascinating piece of equipment. I think that was it opened the late, I think Margaret Thatcher opened it. So early 80s, I think. And it was a hugely expensive thing. But if you think about it, if London got flooded, unlike many other cities, they've got the underground. So in Manchester, we have the Metrolink, which is an overground tram system. But in London, the underground gets flooded. That's it. There has been a couple of times underground stations have been flooded. Once, I think there was somewhere between 80 to 120 people died in this flooding. I think it was around the time of the war and they were hiding down there from the bombs. And unfortunately, a bomb hit a water system and that flooded it. And then the people couldn't get out because they were down there hiding from the bombs. It was shocking. But London probably need that. Rest of the country, probably not. But it's expensive. It's expensive. It was expensive to build and it's expensive to run. And I think they need something like 24 to 48 hours notice to close it, because you are actually closing the river off from the waterway, which it takes some time. when they do it, but they have done it every now and then. And they have test runs as well. But when they do a test run, they tend to do a test run where they only close part of it. But there have been occasions when the weather forecasts have been that bad that they have closed the entire thing. Which is weird. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see it. I've seen it half closed, but I've not seen the whole thing closed. Jonathan does not buy the big gusts of wind story. It's too far-fetched. It looks like someone wasn't looking where they were going. That's what it looks like to me, Jonathan. It takes some doing to do that, doesn't it? If you think of aircraft, the aircraft warning systems would have been screeching hours before it got into that position. But even then, you know, aircraft still crash. No matter how much technology you put in and stuff, they still go wrong. Look at that one at Kegworth where he shut down the wrong engine. I mean, if you've got an engine that's got a problem, as the captain, you've only got two engines. If you've got four, fair enough. But if you've got two and you've got a problem with the engine, go and look at it. You know, leave your seat and go and look at it. Because in this circumstance, they were cross-wired. So he shut down the one good engine. Yeah. And everyone in the cabin was saying, no, the other one. You couldn't make it up. So things still happen no matter what. But that ship, that's a good one. That is a good one. I have seen video of cargo carriers in storms. And it's terrifying. How, when you think of the weight, the sheer weight and size of these things, and it's been tossed around like a piece of driftwood. And I watched it hugely, hugely long. And I'm like, this thing's never going to survive. And yet it did. It may have lost some of its cargo because the water's coming over the top and it's just ripping the containers away. It's terrifying. I really admire people who, you know, once you get on a ship or a boat, that's it. You know, your life is in one, somebody else's hands, and two, the hands of God. You've no idea what will happen. I wouldn't fancy it for a living, let's put it like that. I did watch a documentary that a young lady who wanted to work on merchant shipping, and it was a container like that, and it went wrong somewhere around Canada. It took a wrong turn. Some button had been pressed incorrectly on the deck, and it was miles from where it should have been. And then this storm came in, and they're looking at the plan of where they were going to be, and the weather for where they thought they were. The only problem was that wasn't where they actually were. So they decided they, you know, they would sail west. And the thing was, it went straight into this storm and that was it. She died. I think everybody on it died. And everything that was on it washed up on the Canadian coast. I just think if that's what you want to do, fantastic. But dangerous business. Very dangerous business. Oh, Walgreens is like Boots. I don't think we have Walgreens here. Maybe we do. Somebody from the UK, let me know. I don't think we do. We have Walmart, which is Asda. So they actually own Asda, but the brand is still Asda. A 4-mile cycle to college for Tracy, including two of the long steep hills. This was before the cycleways were built along the River Plain. Tell me about riding a bike to school. What a nightmare. I used to walk to school with my mum until we moved. And we moved to that stupid little village. And then you could literally walk to school. It was a couple of hundred yards. But when I got to the grammar school, luckily I was only there a year, it was miles away. It was four and a half miles away. And it was a road, a long straight road that went straight from the main road down to our village. But there were two hills. One was over a motorway. So you could see the M56 underneath this bridge. And it was awful. But you could do it if you got up like a head of steam. You could kind of pedal to the top, but it wasn't easy. On the way to school, once you'd got to the top, instead of freewheeling down and thinking, all right, I made it to the top and I can freewheel down, you had to pedal like crazy, because what nobody noticed unless they were on a bike was in front of you was a really long, and I'm talking like, you know, 3/4 of a mile hill. It was a slight incline, but it was worse than the Sirius Hill, because if you got off and walked on the Sirius Hill, no one was going to judge you. But if you got off and walked on this thing, it'd be like, well, what are you walking for? But it was awful. It was so low that you would not think it would give you a problem, but it did. So I used to pedal like fury down the hill, and that would take me about three quarters of the way along this very, very shallow incline that was annoying. But coming back, you know, then you were going downhill on this incline, but you still had to pedal like crazy because then you've got the big hill facing you. It was horrible. Absolutely horrible. I much preferred it when we moved here, because although there was a lot more traffic and my mum was quite worried, we agreed like a route that I would take that wouldn't take me along the main road. And it was flat. The whole thing was flat. Oh, apart from Marsland Road Hill, which again, a bad one. But because of where I was coming from, I wasn't coming from the main road. I'd get off and walk because the road, literally, you took a right and the hill was straight in front of you. You couldn't get any kind of speed up there. But it was nice to go down the other side later. School days, happiest of your life, through gritted teeth. Oh, they definitely weren't mine, I can assure you. It was awful. Maybe the sandstorm made the visibility so poor that it made it hard to anticipate to move the ship. Could have been. And yeah, like you're saying, they're hard to steer. I mean, once you've got that moving, there's going to be no stopping it. You can't just stop. And when my dad was renewing his HGV1 thing, he had videos to watch and all kinds of weirdness, things that had changed since he was qualified. And the bits that he knew were not necessarily things that I knew. And he was teaching me that many of these huge trucks that you see have got air brakes, and they cannot manoeuvre the speed that somebody might just decide to dive in front of them. You know, if they slam all on, it could be 10 minutes before they stop. That's just the way that they work. So it makes you understand, one, to give them a wide berth, you know, appreciate, do not be right behind them, because they cannot stop. It's not that truckers have a bad rep in the UK for like they are the kings of the road and they're not going to give you an inch, which may be true for some people. But as a fact, these lorries, they have less control than you would have in a smaller vehicle. So appreciate that. But a lot of people don't. It was nice at the beginning of the COVID thing that people were actually saying, oh, the truck drivers, they're amazing. And I thought, well, they've always been amazing. Because they've got a terrible reputation, and people are always like tooting them and telling them to go faster or get out of their way. You know, they literally can't move. There was one at the top of our main road, and this was a main road, big, huge T junction, cross junction. You wouldn't really get one much bigger. And this truck needed to turn, so he was turning left. But to turn left, he was so long at the back, he had to move to the right. And I'm sat there, you know, watching, and I'm thinking, why aren't these cars getting out of his way? Because with these cars where they were, you know, he couldn't turn. And he had to wait and wait and wait. And by the time I got to the front of it, I like waved and told him to move and I would move out of the way. I don't think people, well, it'd be one of two reasons. One, I'm not giving an inch because I'm a complete idiot. And two, people just don't know. He must have been there 20 minutes. Just trying to turn left. Though it's not surprising people get fraught with it, is it? They take something like a mile to stop. It is a long, long way, Simon, it is. And the thing is, when they put the brakes on, if it is an emergency and they have to put the brakes on to that degree, the sheer weight of what is behind them, so what is hooked up to the cab, because the cab is separate from the back, can crush them. So they really do have to be incredibly careful with that, like putting their foot on the brake and then off and on and off. This is why it takes ages to pass the test. I think the test for a HGV is something like £500. And that's on top of all the training that you would need. A short training course would be about 10 days. That would probably cost you about £4,000. And then there's longer ones, 12, 13 weeks. And the exam goes on for like 3 hours. You have to do a coupling, an uncoupling. You have to do all of the road works on it. It's intense. It is intense. And, you know, so it should be, because those things are a death trap on the road. So it's important that whoever is driving it is competent. But people think of that as like an unskilled job. That's not an unskilled job. Trust me. My dad was sat there. He had a video. And this video was for the new process. So he was used to doing it another way. So he's on this course to renew his certification. And he comes home with a videotape. He puts this videotape on. And it was all about how to wire it up. So there's a coupling system. And you're not just like, it's not a caravan. You're not just hooking it on and you're done. There's all these wires. So they're huge, thick cables, and they have to be hooked in with the other cables. And I think there's something like about 30 odd items. And he's like, it was more difficult for him because they changed all the colours. So Mum sat there and she's watched this video. And after she'd seen it about the fourth time, she was like, if I see this video again, should I think I could do it in my sleep? But Dad was like, no, it was the green to the blue. Oh, no, they've changed that. And it took him so much longer because he had to unlearn something first. So by the time he went in for this test, she said, I'm going to go with him and get qualified. She didn't, thankfully, because, well, Mum chose not to drive full stop. But boy, did she have the theory for everything. Trust me, she knew the theory. He should have been able to take her in with him. And then he'd have been out much faster. Because of the huge momentum, most supertankers turn off their engines 15 miles away from their dock. Hence him getting stuck. Oh dear, probably a Russian captain. Well, do we know who the captain was? Because this one that went, I think it was Portugal, where it got stuck on a sandbank. They did name the captain and it turned out it had a history of doing it. A little bit like the captain of the Titanic. That was not the first time he had had an issue with a ship. It was about the fifth or sixth time. We had a talk at one of our lunch club that's not happened since February last year. We had a talk from somebody who works in health and safety. And the talk was something like the 10 health and safety breaches on the Titanic. And it was fascinating looking at it by comparison to today's rules. It was a really good presentation. Really loved that one. And it turned out, as he said, you know, number one, the captain. And he went through the history of the captain. He's like, who let him on a ship? Even as a passenger, who let him on a ship? The history was horrific. He did have one on a sandbank somewhere. He grounded it and somebody died. And they still gave him the Titanic to go sail. Definitely should not have been playing with stuff like that, I can assure you. What does HGV stand for? Heavy goods vehicle. Heavy goods vehicle, and there are different categories of them. So a HGV1 is the biggest kind, the ones with the cab that would be hooked up to a container of some description behind them. And the containers can be different sizes. So anything from like the biggest ones you would see on the road, which must be 20, 25 metres, something like that, to a smaller one, but it's still separate from the cab. Then you've got HGV2 and HGV3. And as you would imagine, they go down in size and complexity. So by the time you get to a HGV3, it will be a lorry, but it'll be the cab is attached to the back of it permanently. It's a single item, like a large van or something like that. So the company that my dad was the transport manager for, they pretty much used HGV 2 and 3s because they weren't carrying that quantity of stuff. But he had worked at companies where they were, hence he had this HGV 1 that then needed updating when they decided to change all the rules. Even a sort of HGV 3, I mean, they're still lethal. On the back of them, you used to be able to have open ones. So when they sent stuff to a school, like food for a school to prepare for the school dinners, when it all used to be done on site in the school kitchen, it wouldn't have like a container on the back of it. It would be a flatbed. And the stuff would be put on it and it would all be covered up with netting and then strapped to it. There used to be quite a few complaints where, you know, somebody, your lorry's just gone past and there's a sack of potatoes in my front garden, because they'd stopped at a school, taken off what their order was and then not strapped it back up properly. That was always a good one. But after that came rules that any flatbed HGV had to have like a container built on the back of it. So if you were shipping things like obviously ice cream and frozen food, it needed to be have a freezer container on it. But if it was food that you were shipping, it needed to have a container with sides on it, like fabric sides that would then be strapped to the floor. So at least that made it better that you weren't losing stuff backwards and forwards. Thing with that was, and this is very, very common. I mean, I think if Dad hadn't have been doing what he did, I don't think I would have known this. But it's fabric. It's very thick, rubberized plastic, so it can be washed. But people just come along with like knives or garden shears, and they'll just cut off the straps, or they'll just slash through the fabric and then make off with whatever's inside it. And it's so much more expensive to have a complete solid container put on the back of it. And your other problem with that is it's not just the expense of having it done. It's the fact that it then adds to the weight, and then you need to have the axle reinforced, and then you need to have a better floor on it. And it's eating petrol, you know, diesel, because it's so much heavier. There's a lot of things that you don't really think about, but people just left people alone. And I think, you know, you need to appreciate that a bus needs more space to turn. We have a junction at the top of a road near us, and there's two lanes of traffic. Let's see if I can find it so you can see it. If I put Eastway, we might see it. We might find it. Oh, no, actually, I can just zoom in, can't I? There we go. Now I need the pictury view. Need the pictury view, and I need to be able to see it. So possibly looking that way. Can you tilt this? You can see it, but not greatly. So let me go down the other way and see if you can see it better that way. Nope, that's too far. Oh, they've changed it. Cheating, cheating. I had never noticed that. Right, let me know if you can see a bit that says Woodhouse Lane on it. But in essence, if you can, I'll try and describe it. We've got two lanes of traffic. One is for going straight ahead and turning left. And the other on the right hand side is for turning right. But if you look at the state of the junction, it's a big junction. And we have buses coming into Woodhouse Lane. So they're turning off the main road, turning left into the road that you're looking at there. If you look at the paint, which is all but gone, to be honest, but if you look at the paint on the left hand side, the one on the right hand side is shorter than the one on the left. Now, the one on the left now has a symbol on it that you probably can't make out, but it's for a bike. So that's for cycles to wait in front of the traffic. There is a little bit, it looks about 6 inches wide, doesn't it? There's a little bit of space there for a bike, and that didn't used to be there. So if we imagine that that is not there, what you would have there is the car on the left waiting to turn left or go straight on is a car's length ahead of the car on the right. And a lot of people just don't appreciate that the one on the right is there for a reason. And that's so a bus can turn round. And if you actually look at the lines on the road there that you can see, you can actually see where the buses have had to pull out and then turn back in sharply. But you will get some muppet in that lane who wanted to be at the same bumper to bumper level as the one on the left. And then the bus can't turn. And then we have a traffic jam just because people are so stupid. That should be on the test. Stuff like that should be on the test. I swear it should. You were always taught to give trucks a lot of room. That is good, Kim. Trucks need a lot of room. It's not that they are hogging the road, but people don't appreciate it. It might be an idea when people are learning to drive if they went into like a simulator of a truck and tried it, because they would then realise just how out of control it can feel when you're trying to stop it in an emergency. That they do need a long, long, long stop. I mean, you can see the stuff on the back move, and depending on what it is, people have actually got crushed doing that. The driver has got crushed because the container has gone forward and there's nothing that they can do. So it's not surprising. I always give trucks a big space, but particularly on motorways, because they need it. And you will always find some idiot in the fast lane who then decides to cut up three trucks because they've nearly missed their junction. It's idiotic, but I guess they don't know. And if they're not taught on the test, how would they know? I don't suppose you knew, did you? Till Dad sorted you out, gave you hours and hours of give trucks a wide berth, they need it. Exactly. Fabric sides are curtains. They are. They can be called curtains. Where my dad worked, they had to convert all of their trucks. So each one had to have like a, well, stanchions put on the back, really, and a proper roof. And then the stuff off the side. Sometimes they're not curtains. Sometimes they're like rollers. Curtains tend to go from right to left, but they tend to be thinner. The ones that come down from the top, like blinds, are a little bit thicker, so there's less inclination to maybe try and steal from those. But obviously, they're more expensive. The curtain sides are quite inexpensive by comparison, but in the long term, maybe not. So sides of some description, anyway. There's a video on YouTube where they left a curtain lorry open at the back. When somebody went to steal from it, they looked up at the back, removed the curtains and drove the road. So. Oh, I've got to go and see that. Is that a one-way street? No, it's not. No, it's not. The bit that says Woodhouse Lane, the traffic would be coming towards you. The other two lanes are for going, like I say, straight across or taking a left there. The middle one that should be like a little bit further back, that's for turning right. So you should only be in that lane if you are turning right. But people, where it goes wrong, that line is a solid line at the front of it. Well, it should be, but the paint's worn away. You should not cross that line unless you are clear to go. And if you look at the white, they're all white cars, aren't they? If you look at the white car on the right-hand side, they've obviously got a clear way to go. But if you can imagine in rush hour, that car goes up there and then has to stop because there's cars in front of it. The idiots in the queue then decide that they're going to follow up and then they jam the road. And anything coming the other way, even if it was going to turn left, it didn't need to get across the lights and where that the van is, just straight on. It can't because it doesn't have enough room. Cars would have enough rooms, but you get a truck or you get a bus and that's where the traffic jams start. And they can be that can be jammed for hours. You know the best plan? Don't go out. Don't go out. Kim says, how do you know where the centre of the road is? Well, that is split into three lanes. So I guess it widens. If you use the Google Map thing and you turn round, so you face the other way, what you'll see is that it's three lanes as it goes up to the traffic lights. But if you keep going down there, so click down that road, you will get to a point when you bend round the corner. I'm trying to bend around the corner now, where the road is just two lanes, one in either direction. That's relatively new, I think, isn't it, Mike? Because that has always been a black spot. That is jammed constantly. Mm. In the mornings, that is just totally jammed. But we've lived here long enough to understand it all. There used to be some, you know, things that you could do about that, but less so now. Because they just keep blocking everywhere else off, which makes that worse. Do you remember when they decided they were going to have it that you couldn't turn left from the junction near the shops? No one knew what on earth was going on.
That lasted long, didn't it?
I think it lasted 3 days before people totally and utterly ignored it and they had to take it away. It was that bad. It would have made a lot of sense if you couldn't turn right, but they said you can't turn left. But here in the UK, if you're turning left, that's easy. You're not in the middle of the road. You just turn left. And they said, no, you can't turn left. You've got to turn right. So there's two lanes for turning right. So they had two lanes of traffic turning right into two lanes of oncoming traffic and two lanes of traffic turning right. And opposite, there was another road and that was feeding into the same thing. So basically, it was six lanes of traffic into two. And they wondered why it was jammed. People ignored it. There were these huge signs, you know, you can't turn left. Da, 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 da. People just like, yeah, fine. And they ignored it. And eventually these signs disappeared. I don't know if it was the neighbourhood that decided to get rid of them. But honestly, it was such a waste of time and money. A child could have seen that that was not going to work. But if they'd made it that you could turn left, that would potentially have solved half the traffic problems. But, you know, if you leave these unqualified people in charge of it, that's what happens. Oh, Kim says it looks like a one-way street. You might never be able to drive in the UK. I guess with that one, you just need to know. But I will say, all these traffic schemes they've put in, you do need to have your wits about you. Because you go out and it's like, that wasn't there 5 minutes ago. Where did that come from? Where am I supposed to go here? And, you know, you might not know. That's nowhere near the worst. Let me see if I can quickly find this other one that's a classic. Because Mike was like, where am I supposed to go? Do you remember when we went to, it's near the Bridgewater. GMEX, Bridgewater yeah. bit. Where's the, there we go. Here we go. There's United. A bit further on. A56, a bit further on. Bridgewater. Dean's Gate. Bridgewater. Oh, temporarily closed. There's this classic bit. And it's near the tram lines. And you look at it and you think, am I on the tram line? Do I have to cross the tram line? Honestly, I'll show you this. There you go. I'll show you this junction. Can I move back a smidgen? All right, there you go. That has to be one of the most complicated junctions I have ever seen. Let me know if you can see something that says Lower Moseley Street. And there's three girls in a hotel. Well, in front of it, where there's the bike lane, you are supposed to, from the position that camera is, you are supposed to be able to get between the brown building and the black building on the left. And Mike just stopped and said, what the hell? There are two tram lines, one going in each direction. There's a cycle lane. There's a lane for turning right, believe it or not, and there's one for turning left, but woe be gone, don't try taking the other one because there's two no entry signs. That is horrific. I was sat there and I said, I don't know, give me a minute. And I thought, well, that's a tram line, so we should probably cross it. And then you've got to check whether there's any trams coming or not. That one is one of the worst in Manchester. I hate that. I'd rather go another way in than take that. Because that cycle lane is so wide, I've seen taxis go through there. That bollard is in a dangerous spot for its continued good health. Trust me on that. Do have a look at that one. Scotland was easy to drive. The road you travelled to work was so small, you drove down the middle. Scotland's beautiful. Scotland is beautiful. The more rural you are, the less you end up with some mess like that, which is just horrific. I mean, there have been problems in Manchester at that junction and other junctions similar, if it's a truck. Because if you look, it doesn't say no trucks, does it? It doesn't have a height thing. But if you look from the left-hand side, there are two wires going across that you can actually see. And there's a lot more if you were actually looking for them. But there's two huge wires there. That's the electricity for the tramline. So if a truck goes around there and they're a bit too tall, that's it for the rest of the day. While they tear it down and then have to fix it again. So that one is the worst that there is. But Scotland's gorgeous. Scotland is gorgeous. Oh, Renee, it's English. Everyone's on the wrong side. Trust me. People over here are bad enough to start with without telling them they've now got to drive on the other side. No way. And we still have miles instead of kilometres, despite the fact we're in the EU for however long. Because, again, people would not have a clue what that meant. I have a vague idea, but I would have to calculate it. It wouldn't be automatic for me. But yeah, that's one of the worst. Right, we better head off because it's Two Show Friday, isn't it? And I've got the desk to sort out for the unboxings. Plural. Unboxings. So I will say goodnight from me.
And I will say goodnight from me.
And we will both see you very, very soon. Stay safe, guys.